Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. Spoken of only in whispers, volume 4, story 1. Well, my story, it might not seem spooky to you, but it scared the pea diddly out of me and my friend while we were camping at our local lake in the camping area. This was several years ago. Yes, two females camping, and at the time, it must have seemed strange to a lot of people because the couple across from us pulled up lawn chairs and watched us, and the guy in charge of collecting fees came to check on us just after dark. When I asked him why, he said he had never seen two females camping alone before, so he wanted to make sure everything was okay with us and we didn't need any help with anything. Nice guy, and no, neither of us are gay. We just love to camp. And since we were both single and no guys in our lives at the moment, we decided to just jump in and go for it. We had all the camping gear we needed, including a tent. And since our incident, we have camped numerous times at the same lake where the story happened, although not in the same spot. From then on, we camped in the main camping area, where there were always numerous campers. The couple who had sat and stared at us packed up and left later. It was a Sunday night, and a lot of campers pulled out that evening, and that left us alone on that particular camping area. It was a pull-through area that jutted off the main camping area, so it was kind of secluded, and we were the only ones there. After dinner, we decided to do some catfishing, and we took our chairs, poles, bait, and a lantern down to the water's edge. We had been fishing for a while when all of a sudden, it was almost as real as if a voice had spoken to me, but hadn't. I knew we had to get out of there now. I quietly said to my friend, "Pull in your pole and go to the car. Don't even stop to get your purse. Just quietly walk to the car like you are going to get something. I'm right behind you." So that's what both of us did. We calmly walked to the car, got in, and left. As we were pulling out, I explained to my friend what I had felt, and she said she had just felt it also when I told her to go to the car. We have no idea what that was all about, but I totally believe something warned us of danger of some kind. We went back the next day to get our stuff, and everything was just as we had left it, and it no longer felt scary. We packed up, of course, as we had no desire to spend another night in that spot. To this day, we wonder what was out there, but have no doubt that something was. The lake, over the years, has had several strange things reported, including Bigfoot. We're located in a literal hotspot for Bigfoot sightings, and a big cat of some kind, so it could have been either of those. Or even men looking for mischief. Who knows? We will never know, that's for sure. But it was a very scary experience at the time, with no way to explain it. Story number 2. My dad had a friend named Ronnie. His wife's name was Joni. At the time, being I was about 8 years old, I didn't know that the place was an old doctor's office from the early 20th century and that Ronnie and Joni had to constantly deal with strange stuff happening there. Well, one day my dad, mom, and I went over there for whatever reason, and I decided to bring my Hot Wheels along. It was getting late, and we were done eating. There was a small room in between the dining room and the kitchen where the pantry was, and all four of them were sitting in there talking. I was laying on the kitchen floor playing with my Hot Wheels in perfect view of all of them in the next room. So I'm just laying there on my stomach, rooming along, when I notice that I can't spread my legs apart. So I roll over, sit up, look down, and notice my shoes are tied together. Being quite confused, I hop up, hop over to my parents and tell them that my shoes are tied together. "What's going on? Who did that? You guys are all like right here in front of me." They were tied in a real funky way, like in a bow, with both laces on each shoe used as one. Now, my parents didn't want me to know about the ghosts in the house, so they never mentioned it around me. They know I probably would have been pretty creeped out and never went back there, so they know I'm not BSing. All I remember is my parents looking at each other with that "are you effing kidding me" look on their faces. Same with Ronnie and Joni. So my dad untied the laces. All of them were kind of quiet then, and Joni went ahead and said, "Well, I can't believe it, but could that have been the ghost?" I'm like, "What?" I sat on my dad's lap the rest of the night with my eyes closed, completely freaked out. I just wanted to go home. After about 2 years of not wanting to go there, I finally grew up here and decided to do a sleepover with a buddy of mine with an old plop-in VHS video recorder, and we caught some voices. Also, a couple more years later, Ronnie had moved out but still owned the house. And he asked if me and my dad could mow the lawn since we lived closer. One day, we forgot the garage door opener to get the lawnmower and called and asked my mom if she would run it over. We were sitting in front of the house in the car, and I looked over and I see the curtains of the windows get pulled, and a little girl standing there looking right at me. Then she let the curtains go and left. I asked my dad, "Does Ronnie have people over?" That's when my dad told me, "No. Ronnie moved out, remember?" I told him what I saw, and he turned white as a ghost himself. Called Ronnie and told him. He said nobody should be home, and to check the locks and the doors. We did, and they were locked. I didn't know Ronnie had already moved out at the time until my dad told me. And as to who that little girl was, nobody ever said. Story number 3. When I was 15, my parents divorced, and my mom and I moved to an old house in the middle of the old part of town. There was a plaque from the town as the second oldest house in the area, or something to that extent, right by the front door. So it was pretty old. The owners turned this 3-story farmhouse into 3 different apartments. They lived on the second floor and rented out the first to us and the attic to different people over the years. Before we moved in, the landlady warned us that we would be hearing and seeing things happening in the house, but not to worry, because it's been in their family since it was built, and the only people who would be haunting it would be relatives. Somewhat settling, I guess? Well, we didn't pay much attention at the time, but it was true. Doors would open and shut, and you could hear footsteps and talking like living people were just all around inside the place. One night, though, I was sound asleep in my bed facing the wall, and I woke up instantly startled from seeing a bunch of different colored lights flashing on and off, reflecting off my wall. It looked almost like party lights or something turning on and off. That's what it reminded me of anyway. And there was an unbearably loud tone coming from inside my room. It was so loud it sounded like a train was running right through my bedroom. This all happened in a matter of about 3 seconds. I instantly woke up, covered my ears, and flipped over to see what the heck was happening in my room. As soon as I did so, it went completely dark and completely silent. But my ears were ringing like crazy, and my heart was racing 100 miles an hour. We didn't live there long, not because of the activity, just because my mom found a better job in a nearby town and we moved closer to her work. The strange thing is, the house would seem more occupied when no one was there. You could look outside to see if the landlord or any tenants were home. When there were none, you could hear doors opening and footsteps going up and down the stairs on a nightly basis. The landlord said her relatives were probably just confused from the new doors and walls due to the remodeling into the apartment house. Another story of when I lived there was one day me and a friend were hanging out on the couch watching TV. We were young but had a couple of beers, and since my mom wasn't home, figured we would drink the couple we had. We were on high alert because we were young and we were hoping my mom wouldn't come home from work early or anything. Well, as we're just hanging out and talking, my bathroom door very forcefully slammed shut. My friend looked at me petrified, not because he thought it was a ghost. He thought my mom was home and we just didn't realize it. I assured him she was at work and that no one was there. We got up and went to look at the door. It was closed. I knocked, I don't know why, just kind of puzzled and didn't know exactly what to do. No answer. So I tried to open the door. It was locked from the inside. I literally had to go outside, stand on a bucket, and pull myself into the bathroom window to unlock the bathroom door. It made no sense at all. We played with the idea that a ghost in the house was trying to tell us not to drink in the house since we were only 15, but then who knows? Now, in this same house, the landlady, like I said, used to rent out the first and the third floor. Well, while we were there less than a year, she had 4 different tenants for the attic apartment, and not one stayed more than a few weeks. One guy chose to live in his van temporarily until he could find a different place to live. He said he wasn't actually too scared to stay. It was just so active. so many sounds and that his bed was shaking on a nightly basis that he literally couldn't get any sleep. As to that part about not being scared, I didn't believe him then and I don't believe him now. Next story. It was July of either 87 or 1988, because it was either my now ex's birthday or our anniversary. We'd hiked a little over a mile to a lake to camp and have some us time. There was a funny vibe that day. We stopped to shoot my pistols on the long drive to the trailhead, checked the sights, familiarized her. She hated guns, but that day she wanted one. We hiked in, made camp, fished a little. The whole time, ears unusually alert, and I was kind of jumpy, uncharacteristically for both of us. Just before dark, we heard rocks rolling along the head wall of the cirque behind a stand of timber. The starting point seemed to be moving along a path from high right to lower left, as if something was crossing the talus slope out of sight. Kind of made us nervous. It didn't move like a deer or elk moves. It didn't really move like a bear moves. It didn't feel right. The sun was moving lower, shadows getting longer, light starting to fade. It was getting lower, closer to us, moving down and left, and seemed like it was going to pass within 50 yards or less of us. We were getting pretty freaked. I wouldn't say panicked, but in the neighborhood of that feeling. That doesn't make sense considering I had sighted in a .44 and plenty of ammo, and a sighted in .357 and plenty more ammo. A big mag like 4D cell, etc. It was almost as if something was projecting fear at us. So, after some discussion, we decided camping wasn't a good idea. With the dark looming, we didn't put much effort into repacking. It was more like shoving our stuff in our packs as fast as possible so we could beat feet. And the tension was still building. We left the direction the sound was coming from because to our right instead of the left. The trail came in from that perspective, from the right around a ridge. When we approached the ridge line, the trail crossed. We hear something heavy and bipedal sounding coming down the ridgeline towards us. We never saw it, but it changed course and trailed us over a mile, varying from 25 to 100 yards away. Always sounded bipedal, always sounded really, really heavy. With my pack, I probably weighed 230. I was on a hard trail. This thing, off trail, on soft dirt, had more thud to its step by far than I did. 800 pounds, 1,000 pounds. We could sometimes hear the brush swish as it moved through occasionally and also heard a limb break. When we got to the truck, we tossed our packs in the back, then went back to town and camped on my ex's father's floor. It seemed better. Nothing known and accepted can stay on 2 feet for over a mile while carrying 800 to 1,000 pounds. I didn't see it, so I don't know absolutely what it was. But short of that, I'm as sure as it is possible to be that we were escorted out of there by a Bigfoot. Next story. A good friend of mine, who also experienced the phenomena I describe in a few minutes, though in a different place and time, suggested that I needed to talk about it. As with many things that terrify us and cause us to question ourselves or the reality around us, I tend to keep this close to the chest. Quiet and buried, where I put the things I hope to forget. This is my background. I grew up in a large city in eastern Canada. The whole of my life at that point had been spent around noise and light, traffic, and tides of people. It made the concept of quiet solitude very appealing, and I'd learned to seek these things out and appreciate them whenever I could. So when the opportunity arose to visit my parents' home, I took it. This is because they grew up in the far eastern part of Canada, on the island of Newfoundland. Not even from the big city there, but from a small town. One of those towns you can see all just by standing on the biggest street within it. A remote part of a remote island in a remote country seemed like gold to me, especially at that time in my life. I was in my early 20s. I shotgunned straight out of college, aimed at a career, intent on making my mark, but the city I was in wasn't particularly accepting of my skills or the language I spoke, so finding work was difficult and depressing. I gamed a lot more than I should have. I ate more. I drank more. Everything thought it was a good idea for a change of pace. Healthy, even. Of the trip, I will only describe our descent, for it is the most opportune use of the word I will ever know. If you've never been in a small plane at night, flying above a sea of clouds during a full moon, then you are missing one of the few plane-based pleasures available to people in the area of manned flight. It's magical. The sky looked like wet black tarmac and headlights. So many stars, there seemed to be more than the sky could hold. Hovering in the middle of them was the spotlight of a moon, almost too bright to look at. These things together lit the rolling clouds beneath the plane. It looked like pillow stuffing, spread out horizon to horizon, all cast in a silver blue light. It felt like I could walk on it, like it was only a few feet below the fuselage. It moved and breathed and changed as we flew over it. It really was a perfect memory. Then we dove down through that perfection into darkness. We arrived at a small airport outside of my parents' hometown. We could have driven from St. John's, but elected not to. Overnight driving in Newfoundland is perilous for people not accustomed to small roads and wildlife that still remains mostly wild. If your car hits a moose at 60 kilometers per hour, the moose won't get what gets scraped off the road. We still had some driving to do, though. Their hometown was not where we would be staying. But I'd have been in the family for years cabin, about 30 minutes away, in the woods. My lifestyle, back on the mainland, fueled by disappointment and depression, had given me two things I couldn't shake when I landed. A desire to be outside and a completely effed up internal clock. I was so used to playing Ultima Online until 4 a.m. every night that 2 a.m. felt pretty early. So that's when my parents went to bed. I let them know I was going for a walk. They understood, and Newfoundland is not known for violent crimes in the woods, so there was no real concern. I took a flashlight and a walking stick, mostly to avoid turning an ankle and for swatting away an unwanted attention from local fauna. Not that a broomstick literally would do much against an aggressive animal, but if you've never gone walking anywhere not fully tamed, it just feels good to have something solid in your hand. So off I went. Now, ever since our descent, I'd been concerned. This general sense of tension, I attributed it to a new place. No real creature comforts except some books and a lack of computer. Maybe it was just the absence of that amazing scene above the clouds. Whatever it was, that feeling ratcheted up several levels just a few minutes from the house. I shelved it. I figured I'd acclimate shortly, and this was a clearly defined walking path that I knew circled around the small lake next to the cabin and would bring me right back there in a couple of kilometers. Probably a 45-minute walk if I kept a good pace. An hour if I was a bit more casual. The whole way around, I would be able to see the cabin, so I wouldn't lose my orientation. All in all, I'm trying to say I had my bases covered. I even had light, as the moon I'd seen earlier was still overhead, poking out from the overcast sky regularly enough to see. The clouds were fast, as they can be so close to the sea. So, I'm walking down the path, woods to my right, thick impenetrable pine, and to my left, the small lake, lit like glossy black frosted glass by the wind and the moon. Solo walks are great for thinking, so I let my mind wander. The path was well kept and the stick and the flashlight utterly unnecessary. At some indeterminate point in the walk, I felt someone walk over my grave. You know those slow chills when you can feel the wave of goosebumps appear, flowing up your back, neck, forearms, and everything goes tight? I realized I was staring at the lake, at the white noise of the reflected light, and not paying attention to the woods. I became irrationally certain that something terrible was in the woods. I flicked on my flashlight as I turned to look, and it was like sinking in a hot tub. The goosebumps vanished, and the woods seemed utterly unremarkable. Mollified, I continued walking. Then it happened again. Exact same feeling. Once again, I realized I was absentmindedly staring at the lake, wondering if my house was going to go. I remember that specifically. And at that point, I noticed the cabin almost directly across from me, beyond the lake, about as far as I'm going to get from the house during my walk. And all I wanted to do was to be back there with one of my books. As this thought crosses my mind, I notice there's a small part of the reflection on the lake that's missing. It's just gone, like someone went over it with a Sharpie. So I look at that spot, and I focus on it. Of all the bad decisions in my life, that's the one I would wish to take back the most. Even while my Homo sapien brain is trying to assign some reason for this absence of reflection, half-sunk boat, thicket of weeds, weird stone outcropping. My lizard brain is telling me to effin' run as fast as I can. The spot is getting bigger. It is something man-shaped, walking out of the water toward me, very clearly walking, backlit by the moon. I'm frozen. I can't effing move. It's getting closer to shore when I realize I still have a flashlight, one of the big ones people in cabins like to keep around. I drop my stick, fumbled with a flashlight, not breaking eye contact with this thing. I find the switch, which was right where it should be, under my thumb, but hey, panic, and shined it at this man shape. Of course, there's nothing there at all. Just water and moonlight reflection all the way back to the cabin. I swear, I stood there for 5 minutes, motionless except for my eyes, which were grid-searching the entire lake. Finally, I decided I'm imagining things. Despite every inch of me still screaming to run, I decide I will head back the way I came at double speed. I flick the light switch off to get my night sight back. Now, the effing thing is exactly where it would be if it hadn't stopped approaching, right where I had been pointing my light. Close enough now to start obscuring part of the cabin, literally visible in the dark, but not in the light. I froze for some amount of time, probably only a few seconds, but felt like a lot longer, and it got closer. Lake water moves noiselessly, but regularly. You watch reflection on it, and it's just noise. There was no regular waves or anything. It was just a constant shimmer. The edges of this thing were like that. It was hard to notice at first, because just the lake was behind my view of it. But as it eclipsed the cabin and some of the ground, I very clearly saw its edges move, just like the lake. Some people have said scribbles. Some have said static. I feel like these are synonymous descriptions of what I saw. At about 10 feet, I realized there wasn't going to be any kind of stopping. It wasn't going to stop and say something or resolve itself into some drunk mirage or anything. I wanted to deal with it. So in lieu of pooping on myself, I dropped the flashlight and I heard it break and sprinted back to the cabin. I fell once, skinning my shin pretty rough, but made it back to the cabin in about 10 minutes. Wasn't in great shape. I got back to the house. My head was pounding, my ears roaring, and I'm nauseous. Tumbled in and collapsed into the downstairs bedroom. This was a two-floor cabin, and my parents were upstairs. They were undisturbed by my noisiness, and I collapsed into bed. Then I noticed my one window is framing the lake like a painting. Everything just outside the window is pitch black. Moon is on the other side of the house. I decide I can't deal with that, so I go back out to the main room and close all the doors and windows I can see and sleep on the sofa. At some point, hours later, crashing from the adrenaline and the run, I fall asleep. Next morning, my parents wake me up when they come downstairs and they ask me why I'm sleeping on the couch, fully clothed, and why my jeans are ripped. I'm too self-conscious at this point to say anything close to the truth. So I just say, I fell, lost a flashlight, and had to come back and just fall asleep on the couch by accident. They buy it. I didn't sleep well or much at all, so I decided to go to my actual bed and get some actual sleep. I walked over, opened the door to my room, and lying perfectly aligned on the bed is the broken flashlight covered in dirt and the broomstick side by side like matchsticks, and my window was locked. Next story. This happened back in 2013. Me and my wife, we did a little bug out in the woods sort of thing for the first time. It was still pretty cold since we were up here in Wisconsin, but we wanted to see if we could make it 3 nights with what we had in our backpacks. The 50 acres of land we were on belonged to my landlord, Jane. The lady is practically my aunt, as she is a longtime friend of my mom and dad's. And before her husband died 5 years ago, his name was John, he was practically like my uncle. He was a big-time hunter, outdoorsman. He was always out back doing something with his ATV. Now back to the present. We decided to try a tarp tent that day. We had a good time during the day, hell of a time trying to make a fire and keep it going with everything wet, but we managed. It was starting to get dark, and we just had sleeping bags, but nothing to put under us, no mat or anything, so it was just hard snow under a tarp. Led for a pretty miserable sleep. Hey, it was our first time doing something like this. And it started to get dark and we were dozing off. And suddenly we hear what sounded like an ATV coming from the north. It instantly woke both of us up. The land we were on has barbed fencing to the east of us about 100 yards. And in between us and the fence is an ATV trail that runs north to south. So at first I'm like, I wonder if it's Jane. Maybe coming out here to check on us or something. So I waited a minute, expecting the loud noise to get closer, and it did. So I watched for it and went right by us on the trail heading south. The thing is, it's pitch black out and there were no headlights. Confused, I got out of the tent and listened the best I could, and maybe I could get a better idea of where it was going. It wrapped around us to the southwest where the trail led, and then all of a sudden the noise just stopped. Dead stop. Like the ATV was turned off. Now, 30 seconds later, I heard the ATV again, but not coming from the southwest where I'd heard it shut off, but from where it started to the north. Sure enough, it does the exact same thing. The sound rides by us, no headlights, and wraps around. It does it two more times. Exactly the same. The noise disappears every time. I decide that enough is enough. I call Jane, waking her butt up, and I asked her if she was out here. She said, no. Nobody has the ATVs out? She said, no. So I'm like, screw it. I'm hiking the 50 yards over to the trail, and I want to wait for this thing or this person, whatever it is, to come by and probably scare the hell out of whoever it is who isn't supposed to be out here. So I go, and of course, my wife is too scared to stay back in the tent. I mean, tarp by herself, and is hang on to my jacket the entire time. I looked at the trail, and there's no ATV tracks in the snow. Being even more confused, I just waited. Now let me point out, real quick, that the trees had no leaves, and there was snow everywhere. So I'm pretty positive I would have seen headlights reflecting off the trees in the snow back from where I was in the tent. So we're waiting and waiting for this ATV to show up, when finally about 5 minutes later, we hear it coming from the north, where it's been coming from every time. Getting ready to scare the bejesus out of the person, what happened backfired and scared the living crap out of us. The sound got what seemed to be 25 feet away and dead on stopped. The woods turned dead silent. Now, I know what an ATV sounds like, and that was it. It was loud and then totally silent. It didn't continue south like it did every other time. The only difference this time was we were in its path. I think about what happened almost every day, and all I can come up with is that it was John messing with us on his ATV in the middle of the night. So, being pretty startled, we packed up and left. As we were walking out of the woods, I came across boot prints in the snow. Very fresh tracks with boot treads in them and everything. I didn't go that way at all the entire time we were out there. And Jane is the only one who walks out back. But it couldn't have been her because those boots were bigger than mine, and I'm a size 12. I know snow expand tracks, but these were brand new. So, was it a ghost, or was it a live person? Next story. I used to live in Pendleton, Oregon, and went to the old Olney Cemetery in Pendleton, Oregon, in the late 1980s. I used to go out there on a regular basis, especially on cold winter nights with a buddy with a similar taste for adventure, and we'd go out and read tombstones and check out the creepy and eerie stuff out there. Now, Pendleton is an old town in eastern Oregon, and the population has been 20,000 from the mid-1800s until today. The people are kind of isolated out there, and cliques and clubs are super tight there. Oddfellows, masons, you get the idea. The cemetery is commonly a place where guys in robes are out conducting funeral services and fulfilling the rites of their club members when they pass. The older section of the cemetery is full of tombstones from the late to the mid-1800s. Lots of cursive script and scroll work on Carrara marble headstones. Lost children, dead babies, mothers lost in childbirth. The monuments are old and worn, weathered in the hard, icy Oregon winters. Trees surround groves of angels, both angels of mercy and angels of death. Skulls on headstones are common. Life taken in its infancy and prime. The odd fellows have the most amazing monuments that are difficult to identify in the dark, as they are carved or cast in the shape of trees. The newer section of the cemetery are hills covered with headstones that are easily driven over with a riding mower, so we didn't spend time there. We didn't want to be seen, so we drove the small car up into the cemetery after midnight with the lights off. We hid among the trees, which were more common back then. There was also no gate, which now sits at the main entrance. We usually ended up reading the tombstones and comparing dates, trying to find one that was creepier than the other, or maybe the youngest death age, or something equally morose. Tons of crypts and other remnants for old families were all about, and you always considered which one would open, resulting in something evil or bizarre coming out to punish you for disturbing their rest or for screwing around near their final place of rest. A lot of people died with unfinished business, and we were more than aware that spirits can be restless and often angry as a result. We had mini mag lights that ran on AA batteries and put clear red filters on the lenses so they wouldn't be easily seen. The trick to read faded and worn tombstones isn't to shine the light directly on the writing, but to lay the body of the flashlight parallel and against the tombstone face, creating readable shadows where the worn words are otherwise barely readable. The angle of the light lying across the stone reveals the shallow remnants of carving and inscriptions that haven't been legible for years. One night, we were out as usual, and it was cold and relatively still. We had been out there for about an hour or so, just meandering about and straying away from the car. All of a sudden, the wind stirred in the trees, not uncommon for a cold October, but it caused me to be on the alert more than usual. All noise died to a dull, muted blur. Everything seemed to slow down, silence. The wind was still stirring and blowing hard around us, and the temperature dropped about 20 degrees, revealing our breath even more so in the cold air. I froze, as did my buddy. I grabbed his arm and we hid behind a tombstone tree, and I asked him if he felt that feeling that was causing the hair on my neck and arms to stand straight up. He whispered, "Pure evil." It was a malevolent feeling that we'd never felt there before. As we hid behind the monument, we couldn't see anything as it was a new moon and nearly pitch dark, the best time not to be seen. Even the dim lights from the remaining businesses over the hill seemed to fade into black. I couldn't hear anything but the wind shifting and stirring the angry leaves, and I strained my every sense to locate whatever it was. It started moving, too fast to be human. I couldn't see it, but I knew exactly where it was, and it was coming around the headstones about 20 yards away. I got the distinct feeling that whatever was there was trying to flank us and come around to cut us off. "Now run!" I hissed to my friend, and we sprung out and booked it for all we were worth, back up the hill to the car. It kept moving, but faster now. We jumped in the car, with me in the driver's seat. I never locked the car in such places, and shoved the key in and had it running before Craig had his door closed. I was spinning tires as his door slammed, and we flew down that narrow one-lane road, right back where we had come in from the cemetery, hitting 60 miles an hour or so, racing down the hill, with no room to spare and with the headlights off. He kept looking back, but couldn't see anything. And I was so focused on not hitting tombstones next to the road that I couldn't chance a glance in the mirror. I could feel its presence still, just as dangerous and unfeeling and uncaring as before, and asked him if he could see it. "No, but it's right behind us." I knew he was right. I hit the exit of the cemetery and came out of there like a rocket, sliding and screeching into the slick street, turning to the left to get out of there. I hit the lights and looked back to see nothing behind us. I crisscrossed alleys and streets through towns just in case, hightailed it back to our apartment, and we ran inside and locked the door. Whatever it was stopped at the edge of the cemetery property. It was a nervous night, but nothing else happened after, although neither one of us slept well, and we kept a rotating watch all night just in case. I've always been of the opinion that the military has it figured out when it comes to watches and security. I never fall asleep or rest until I know someone has my back in such situations. We never went back to that cemetery ever again and tried to avoid the general neighborhood. We talked about it later and both agreed that we both thought it was a person at first, but the way it moved, the speed with which it moved, and the way it pursued us left us both with no doubt there was something that wanted to cause us harm. Even now, almost 25 years later, I wouldn't go in that cemetery at night for a bucket of cash. Those things have long memories. It's best not to fool around with entities that leave you with those types of feelings and experiences.